Hello and welcome, listeners of KGVM Radio in Bozeman. This is The View From Here. I am along with my comrade-in-arms, Jeff Milchen. I'm Steve Kirchhoff, and today the two of us are joined by Jeff Krause. For the past 16 years, Jeff served on the City Commission twice as mayor.
Three times as mayor. No, that's all right.
Jeff is professionally is a CPA, and prior to serving on the City Commission for the last 16 years, Jeff was served on the Local Government Study Commission from 1994 to 1996. He served as Gallatin County's treasurer from 1997 to 2001. And in the middle of his service for the City of Bozeman, he gave a stint on the Regents from 2012 to 2015. So you could say it's a mature life of public service, and we're grateful for that. He began serving the City of Bozeman in January of 2004 and will serve out his last day for now on the 31st of this month.
Well put.
Jeff's been a mainstay on the commission for more than a decade and a half of rapid growth and change. He served with a unique combination of passion, energy, intellectual vigor, and commitment to Bozeman. So today we welcome him to KGVM to learn about his reflections after 16 years serving the city, gather his insights about community service, know his thoughts on our common future as residents of Bozeman and the Gallatin County. We're going to learn a lot of the whys and the wherefores of what's going on in our environment around us. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, and those are very kind words, and ditto for you as well. I think a lot of people admired the time that you and I discussed things vigorously back and forth on the commission. In the 6 years we served together, there was a whole lot of... In fact, that was the fastest geographical expansion of the city that we experienced in my time. And we dealt with large planning and zoning issues at the time, and also and the associated policies that went with it, and that, you know, that is a struggle. And I think the biggest things that I have to reflect on now that I live on the far west side of town really are, what were we talking about then, you from one point of view, me from another, but in general, wanting to build a city that looked like the city we were already happy with, right? We were happy with Bozeman. We were happy with the way it was laid out. We were happy with the way we shared neighborhoods. We were happy with the size of streets. We were happy with neighborhood schools. We said, well, how can we build what we're happy with, just more of that? Because we could see things were coming. And so a number of things, whether economic or, boy, I don't know how to say it. I think we adopted standards and somehow we let that get away from us. Because I live out there on the other side of town, and there are plenty of people live over here that say, well, that's not even Bozeman. And I go, wait a minute, I'm a citizen of Bozeman. We're Bozemanites. But I have to agree with you, what the city allowed to be built out here does not feel like there. Mm-hmm. And I think it could. And there are things you and I talked about, whether it was the Hamletization of Bozeman,
right,
which was probably a good thing, right? We argued about it a little bit, but that's probably the way to go, rather mm-hmm. than trying to stuff everyone around one central area,
right,
having a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't do that either.
Right.
And you and I, we talked about...
Is this just the best laid plans of mice and men kind of thing?
No, I think we... One, we didn't pay attention as a commission. That's on me as much as it is on anyone. We got absorbed with, you know, whatever the issue du jour was. And we relied on staff, and they would come in and they would say, well, we have to adopt these standards. And, you know, the attorneys would say, well, you got to adopt these standards. And so we'd adopt these standards. Well, the problem, gentlemen, with adopting generic standards is that you end up with generica.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am a generican.
So, Jeff, give people a little better idea of what standards you're talking about.
So, two of the big ones that, you know, three of them, I will say, and they're all related. So, the first one is the size of roads. We just had some votes 2 years ago about the size of roads, and I voted for three-lane roads and one four-lane road. In general, I think four-lane roads are too big, and I think the three-lane roads we build are too big. I don't see anything wrong with Wilson Avenue, to tell you the truth. The lanes are too wide. The center lane is too wide. and the speed limit is too fast. And the combination of those two things prevents pedestrians from going back and forth. It splits the city. It's built for commuters, mm-hmm. for people coming into town. It's not built for neighborhoods. And then, as an excuse for all that, they have lighted the west side like the surface of the sun. And I say they because for the last 2 years, I've been saying, wait a minute, what are we doing over here? If we lighted this old part of town over here, if we just started going up and down the streets and firing them up, there would be a stampede down there at the city. And, you know, you would all come down and say, we're cutting them down. But they say it's safe and you can, you know, you're going to trip on a crack.
So the question then is something that you said you wanted to investigate, the why.
Yes.
How does that happen? Because as I recall, when we adopted the 2020 plan way back in the day,
yeah.
and we brought in Dan Burden to talk about skinny streets, and we had citizens advocating for dark skies, we were going in an opposite direction. And the engineering staff seemed to be on board with that. And it's I would say it's engineering who would be the people on my right who are bringing forward to you these new standards.
Right.
How did the engineering staff decide that a different set, rather than the ones that have been adopted through the planning process? Why is a different set better?
I don't believe that our elevated conversation, which included Dan Burden and Alex Marshall and all of these people, you know, the things that we talked about there, ever translated to this idea that we would have to adopt Bozeman standards. Not national standards, not the international standard. We were going to have to buck some trends,
mm-hmm.
serious trends. We were going to have these conversations that said, how do you think these are safer than these big wide streets? And we were going to have that discussion, which never did, never came up. And
because
they're the standards, right? Mm-hmm. There's just sort of this thing where, you know, the professionals come to you and say, this is the standard, this is for safety, this is the way streets are built, and and they've checked the boxes and they approve the development of the street.
Mm-hmm.
I think so 2 years ago when we approved the design of Oak and Durston and Cottonwood in particular is as wide, I think, as Jackrabbit Lane. Imagine a Jackrabbit Lane splitting this city, which is as wide as Huffine or as wider than 19th, I think, in some places. So imagine those.
That's already constructed. I confess that I have not traveled.
And now it does have a roundabout on it.
Saving up a turnaround of 747.
Yes, right. It has
international standard.
It has that international standard feel to it,
mm-hmm.
and we built for there's going to be a lot of traffic coming down this,
mm-hmm.
and maybe some of it was sort of getting freaked out about. Even though we opened up 19th and Main, it's still a jam-packed jamboree at 5 o'clock. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this big policy, right? Where are all those people going and coming from? I think it's Montana State University. So encouraging a built environment right around Montana State University where people want to live would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we did some of that. We've built some roads out there and it hasn't developed yet, but that would be a good thing.
So isn't there a plan for a kind of a downtown south of Kagi on 11th by the stadium? Isn't that the place, or is it further west?
Yeah, what I would say, it's there's probably some of that is further west, farther west. I don't think there isn't anything like I would like to see. All right, I've thought about this a long time. What does a neighborhood node look like? You'll recall you and I getting into it about smart growth and celebration and neighborhood nodes and you know, people went at first, back when we first, you know, in the 90s, we talked about neighborhood nodes. We were talking about inside the neighborhood. And it became pretty clear that nobody really wanted a successful bar and restaurant in the middle of their neighborhood. They might want it on the edge, but they wanted it on the streetcar street. They wanted it on a little street that looked like that little piece of college between 8th and 11th. Mm-hmm. That's really what we want.
Mm-hmm. Well, except we'd like it to have trees.
Well, that's true. You know. and maybe some crosswalks where people didn't get run over. But
right.
that, you know, but you know what I'm talking about, right? So what does a neighborhood node look like? And I don't know, you guys might want to answer it, but a neighborhood node to me looks like the intersection of Wilson Avenue and Main Street. That's what a neighborhood node as a transportation element looks like. You park on the street. It's tight. Mm-hmm. It's hard to see around the corners.
Building edge right at the sidewalk.
It stops right there. People mm-hmm. are walking all over. Mm-hmm. There's bikes going by. Mm-hmm. And then there's big windows that people are looking into, right? All of those things. Mm-hmm. Well, how many of those have we built? Mm-hmm. We haven't built any. Mm-hmm. But there's not a one on the west side. And yet neighborhood nodes are in there. And the things that we dream up to tell ourselves that we're building neighborhood nodes include vast, Latinga's out there in Jerry Williams development, right? That's an answer to anything. It's not. Because mm-hmm. we didn't build the roads. The nearest big intersection to Latinga is a brand new giant intersection, right?
Jeff, I can't help but be just a tiny bit narcissistic right now and think that, you know what, you have really missed me, haven't you?
I have.
Yeah. Because what it strikes me is that those standards that we adopted through the 2020 process and then in the years that followed it for the skinnier streets, and when we would tell the engineers, well, we're not going to have an 11-foot wide lane.
Right.
We'd like to have 10. We'd like to have 9.5. Well, we can't do that.
Right.
Okay, so 10. We adopted 10.
Yeah.
But now I'm hearing it's even wider than that. Just as an example of a detail.
Yes.
You need to have advocates on the commission who care about the details that, in the end, are part of your total assemblage of your community. Right?
Right.
It sounds to me like you don't have the internal advocacy from the elected officials who are pushing back against the professionals who are telling you stuff that's coming from somewhere else.
Right? Well, so west of 19th, in some ways, is somewhere else, right? and it's our fault that it is.
Right.
And I think the problem is, you know, we had a mayor one time say, "Well, Ferguson Avenue, is that the one that where you can only turn to the right?" You know, mm-hmm. and it was, of course, but to have to ask that question as the mayor, oh, how embarrassing, right?
Right.
You should know. I mean, it shouldn't be a mystery out there what that piece of ground is. And mm-hmm. of course, we know what Ferguson is now because that's where the SID is going by the 100-acre park that we're getting sued over by the county, right?
SIDs are.
Special Improvement District. SIDs are how we build every road and also rebuild every street. We're not a county street in the city of Bozeman. We built every street. The one right out in front here was built with an SID 40, 50 years ago.
And they're about to redo 5th, which is half a block.
Over. Right, and there's a big row about it. What do you mean? You should have maintained it all these years. We're not really talking about maintaining it over there. We're talking about rebuilding it. And for 50 years, yeah, you didn't have to do anything to it,
mm-hmm.
right? And now you're going to have to, right? Mm-hmm. It really isn't the case that this part of town with its 6-inch sewer mains and its crumbling roads and gutters, all of that is not because of growth. That's because in the 80s and 90s, we didn't set aside $500,000 a year. And the people of Bozeman weren't ready for that kind of taxation, and they just wouldn't do it, mm-hmm. right? We have a number of processes now, and without getting into the weeds, accounting standards changed, and we had to record depreciation, and we had to tie that to the physical streets.
Weeds.
I'm sorry. What happened was we drove a truck down up and down every street in Bozeman and determined what the mm-hmm. condition of that was and what had to be done to it, and then tried to figure out a way to address that.
Right.
And so some of it you own. You know, mm-hmm. as a resident here, just like I own part of Durston that's in front of my house, right? And when I bought in a new place, I paid for that, right? So people ask me these end of commission, you know, resigning, like, what do you most regret? I regret that, first of all, I got distracted from this, that I couldn't tie planning and that big idea that you keep talking about. Like, you and I argued about the design of Durston, median or no median, and yet the real argument that we should have both shared was we want 3 12-foot lanes and 7-foot bike lanes on the sides, right? So it would have been tight. You mm-hmm. would have felt... I'll tell you another one. Here's another thing, right? You drive down Oak Street from one end of Oak to the other, and you can go 45, you can go 30, you can go... I think there's a 25 in mm-hmm. there. Sometimes it's brightly lit. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's completely dark.
Mm-hmm.
There is no standard there. you don't know what the speed limit is.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
When you come into town, like where I live, right out there where that little swerve is, and you hit Durston, it's in town, coming east, the speed limit should be 30 miles an hour when you get to Wild Crum on the other end, except for where it's 20 miles an hour around the schools, it should still be 30 miles an hour. 20 on every local street right out in front here,
mm-hmm.
this should be a 20 mile an hour. There's even a national thing that says 20 is plenty.
Mm-hmm.
20 is plenty.
Right. But, I mean, part of that is the design determines speed far more than the posted speed limit. And you're not going to see, at least, you know, being on a similar street in town, we don't really have much of a speeding problem. It's really rare to see someone going more than 25 miles an hour. But it's not because of posted speed limits. It's because the street feels dangerous.
Yes.
It's narrow enough so that you're afraid that you might not see a pedestrian or a dog or a kid coming out into the road. And so, you know, the civil engineering cult likes these wide roads and wide lanes when we all know, if we look at the data, that that is patently unsafe, that that makes people, gives people a false impression of safety and makes them drive faster. So when you talk about the fact that you were advocating for skinny streets, but it didn't happen that way, could it give us a little better idea why the civil engineers would be able to push back against what city council expresses as the desire for?
I don't believe they pushed back. I believe we adopted the, you know, it was on consent, probably. We're adopting the national standards. Okay. We're adopting the national standard. Mm-hmm. It was because we didn't incorporate into the engineering this discussion that said we can't have national standards. We don't have national standards in the old part. There is no national standard that says every intersection is unguarded, you know, doesn't have stop signs on it. Like, you know, how many people move to town and the first thing they complain about is, I drove through town and there's no stop signs,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, the intersections are drive carefully.
So what I'm hearing is that the force of the city commission is determined by the constituency on the city commission, and that changes every 2 years.
It does. It does. We, yeah, so we're chasing other things, right? We're chasing parks or we're chasing something else, and we're leaving it to the professionals to do the thing. But whether it was the 2020 plan or the 2009 community plan, still had those same concepts, which is we want tight little corners where commerce happens
mm-hmm.
and the neighborhood happens.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't we get those? Because we adopted a national standard.
Let me ask you why neighborhood associations on the Northwest Side, or just individuals, citizens living on the Northwest Side, why are they not raising a hue and cry about this gigantic, you know, highwayization of their neighborhood and the overlighting of their streets?
Well, we're getting a lot of kickback. We're getting a lot of pushback on the lighting. That is happening, and part of it is my fault because I'm pushing back on the lighting very hard. But on the street design, and I think the other thing is, we don't conceive of it. We're not showing them what can be,
mm-hmm.
right? We're not showing them an ideal.
Mm-hmm.
We can't afford to live in the old part of town, right? And I can't afford to pay whatever the price of a bungalow or around Cooper Park is. So I can't live in the old part of town, and no one is showing me anything different out here in the West,
mm-hmm.
right? There's nothing. There's no place that looks like the old part of town on the West Side.
Mm-hmm.
The exception, I think, is Valley West.
Mm-hmm.
Valley West looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps when the market goes in, and they've controlled the lighting and the streets are tight and you can't mm-hmm. go very fast on those. So it does look good. Valley West looks good. If we had more Valley West, that would be great. But once you pop out of Valley West, because there's not a grocery store,
right.
there's not a bar.
Right.
Sorry, my prejudices are showing.
Well, you put food first, then. That seems very healthy.
I'm glad I did that. you know, and some of the other things, right? And so, you know, we emphasized this commuter thing.
Well, let me ask, are there other commissioners, can you muster a majority that says what we're doing is failing in terms of replicating what is demonstrably true about what people prefer right? If people do prefer the old part of town, and we're gonna try to bring the hamlets and the nodes into reality.
Yes.
We're not doing it. What about the five members of the city commission?
I have not been able to say stop putting in lighting until we figure out what we want. Almost every Monday night we approve a new lighting district. And the lights go in, and they're too bright, they're unshielded, they're too tall.
How is that even possible?
Because you have to do that to approve the subdivision. You know, there's this thing like you got to vote yes or else I don't know what. And so I've been voting no and getting a lecture. And there is no earthly reason.
Do you think that the others on the commission would consider you to be a curmudgeon?
Yes.
Or did they see that... Maybe he's got a point, but nobody else is backing him up. Nobody from engineering is backing him up. Nobody from planning is backing him up. So he's isolated.
I think I read that in a chain email that goes around. I can't remember the guy's name from Alabama that sends it out, you know, and says, no need to worry about Krause. He's just a curmudgeon.
He's just that guy.
Yeah, that votes no.
You can expect that guy to say that thing.
And so, yes, if there were two of me, you know, if there was another person who would vote that way. I took Iho after a meeting the other night in my old beater car, and we drove all around the West. And I said, Iho, you just got blinded so that you can't even see the street in front of you. How is that good? Or we stopped on the side of the road, and I said, see, you can see the very top of that house from that streetlight. You could read the King James Bible on the top of that roof. Mm-hmm. What possible civic good is there to light the tops of people's roofs?
I don't know.
Are you looking for Santa?
How many people like to read the King James Bible in the middle of the night on their roof?
By the way, that's the pocket edition, right?
So, Jeff, lighting is something I'm fairly ignorant about. Are there similar national standards people are using for this?
Okay. Oh, yes, there are national standards that were called.
But I thought we adopted a dark skies ordinance.
We did. And they said to me, well, but and these streetlights conform to the dark sky ordinances, except, you know, when we went to the LEDs, which that's a big change, right? From over here were sodium vapor, mercury vapor.
Right.
So the LEDs are a different kind of light altogether. So we didn't do that. I mean, the good news is LEDs can actually be built so that they're extremely directional.
Mm-hmm.
So that they only focus, let's say, on the crosswalk.
Right.
You don't have to light the neighbor's roof. Maybe you're looking for Santa. That's the one this time of year. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Right? Merry Christmas.
But remember, they're all tied together. The width of the street gives you the sense of speed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get the people across the street in a wider street, so you have to have a brighter light. The speed's higher, so the standard is a brighter light, and so all of those things are tied together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you're at a place where, well, I would love to go 3 blocks and go see my neighbor, but I have to cross Cottonwood Road,
mm-hmm.
and that's... You know, I got to put my track shoes.
Defined.
That is my track shoes, mm-hmm. and most of the people that are riding on that aren't from living in town. They're not from the city. They're not used to driving in town. So, and that's why, while I understand what Jeff was saying about, well, if we just tightly pack the roads, which I do agree with, we'll get some of this perceived safety. You also sort of have to, right at the city limits, with your infrastructure, declare you're not in the you're in the county, but you're not in the unincorporated part of the county anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the different set of standards. And if you just had one that said it's 20 and 30, and that's how fast you go in town, you know, you could sell that. This is town. We go 20 or 30, depending on what it is. And here you are. And we're going to have fairly wide bike lanes. And, you know, we passed a safe, a complete streets thing that requires, but how many people use that? Not that many.
What do you mean use that?
You know, ride on those shared,
bike pad?
Well, no, not the bike pad, but where you're just out there in the street. I do, you know, but I mm-hmm. used to ride across the Lee Bridge in Richmond, Virginia, where if you fell one way, it was 150 feet to the river.
You're made of sterner stuff.
The other way was into the traffic that ran you over.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I was used to that, right? It's what you're used to. But I think here, putting your burly, you know, unless you're Taylor Lonsdale or one of these dedicated bike riders, putting your baby in the burly and riding down one of those 5-foot bike lanes on the edge of Cottonwood when the rest of the traffic's going 40 is just well,
especially
ain't the
this
thing.
Time of year when you know the bike lanes are full of crud. You know, unless you've got a mountain bike, it's not even rideable.
And so, by the way, the bike lanes are full of crud a big part of the year in Bozeman, Montana. Mm-hmm. You know,
right. So can I blow this out?
And
take it to like a more abstract level, because what I'm getting here is it sounds like there's some amount of discontent.
For me, as though
the best intentions never really got served.
We didn't communicate. I don't know how many times I said, let's just take what we like about Bozeman and build it again. And then, by the way, growth won't bother us as much because we'll go over there and we'll go, oh, I recognize this, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't happen. You said to me when we had all kinds of conversations and you know, I said weird things, you said weird things, and you said one time, well, I'm all for street congestion. Look, I'm not all, and I know what you were saying, and it wasn't really that. It was, I'm all for a tightly packed community, and if the streets get congested because some people have to travel from one side to the other, maybe they should make a different decision. And I'm all for that, too, because it doesn't split the city up.
Or simply go at a different time rather than...
Yeah,
during a rush hour.
If you envision us being a beach ball that is blown up past so the seams are starting to split, if you took some air out and packed us in a little tighter, we'd all feel like we were one community again. Mm-hmm. And the things that really determine that...
How do you get that back? We've already adopted Cottonwood. We already have these atrocious lighting standards. But is there a middle measure? So, for example, can you get there with pedestrian refuges? Can you get there with tapered lanes at crucial intersections so that grandma can cross the street and she can do that in the company of her dog and her, you know, 8-year-old granddaughter?
Does she have track shoes?
Is it salvageable?
So one of the things I would tell you, for example, right now, there's going to be a development on, let's see, is it, it's Babcock, right? In between 19th and 11th.
Okay.
Right? 19th and 11th is still a county road on Babcock is, you know? It doesn't have sidewalks, curbs, gutters.
Right.
And it ends at two intersections that are bad.
Right.
And there's a lot of sort of thrust that says this has to be a collector because traffic's going to bypass Main Street on that. I have a better idea. Why don't we allow that to be built with housing on either side of it? And let's build it so that it looks exactly like college between 8th mm-hmm. and 11th, only with trees, of course. But let's have three-story buildings with apartments on one side, and on the other side, let's
have... How come you're saying this with a tone that it's going to be taken as pie in the sky?
Because it's pie in the sky. Because see on this map, this is a collector, and collectors are built to this standard, and we're going to light it this way, and
but the problem,
that's the way
the problem
is
not that... that the standard says that. The problem is that you can't get two other commissioners to vote with you to adopt a different road width.
So a friend of mine said, Jeff, I was watching you talk about something the other day, and I agreed with everything you said, and he was not a, you know, I'm supposedly a conservative, and he said, and it's not, and I agreed with every
single... Did he say he's a conservative, Jeff?
Sounds like a flaming
lesbian
for the conversation we've been
having. And he said, I agreed with everything you said, and you would know who it was. And I looked at the other four commissioners, and they weren't even listening to you. And it's because I've been the loyal opposition so long that they can just blow it off, right? Mm-hmm. And there are people that just have an idea, and they come in, and their minds are made up, and that's the way it is. I've seen a little bit of movement on that, particularly, you know, on this subject. But I think part of that is...
You just need to call me, Jeff.
You
I'm very, very easy to pull out of my house on a Monday night.
Yeah.
There's still some body memory of that. I'd love to come down and testify on the behalf of these kinds of standards that you're talking about that are the cozier ones, the community fostering standards. And if you need someone to do that, I think a lot of citizens don't know that's happening.
Yeah.
Because as you said, some of these standards were adopted on the consent agenda. I don't think listeners might not even know what the consent agenda is. It's typically an item that's so cursory that it's not going to require a full discussion and presentation by staff. So you just adopt them wholesale at the beginning of the meeting.
Yeah.
And so,
because it's the national standard. Right, everybody does it. That's why we look like Everywhere USA.
Right. And, you know, to Steve's point, I think there are probably hundreds of people out there who also care about this, who would show up. I think what's missing is a dedicated communication channel to inform people about these issues. Because I know from personal conversations, a lot of people share the views that you guys are expressing and would turn out to express their opinions. So what would it take to get that kind of infrastructure in place to activate more engaged citizens?
Well, isn't there already such a structure called the Neighborhood Association?
I don't know. Those are fundamentally, so here's a funny thing, Jeff, is in my mind, Steve Kirchhoff is one of the most conservative people I know, right? He's for a status quo. He wants a town that looks like it did when he was growing up. Right.
The root of the word conservative is conservative. I totally adopt the meaning and the spirit of that word.
And what I'm saying, right? You adopt what I'm saying. You're the conservative guy, right? Mm-hmm. You're the one that says, boy, Bozeman was great then. And I am the radical change agent. I'm the guy that came in and said, man, you know, I'd like to have my son work here. By the way, your son works here too, Steve. Mm-hmm. Isn't it great?
Mm-hmm. Great.
And you know, other people are able to work here. And I can conceive of a town where we're not locked into just this rolling real estate thing all the time and whatever MSU does, where we have technology and you know, outdoor gear manufacturing and a variety of choices economically so that we have a better. And so I'm the radical change agent that moved here, didn't know a single soul, and advocated for a more progressive, in the old sense, town.
Just want to remind folks, you are listening to KGVM in Bozeman, 95.9 FM.
Well, thanks for that, Jeff. And I'd like to just ask maybe one last question on the subject of growth, and then maybe we can segue into your thoughts, your reflections. You can look back over your 16 years of service and look at the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever, however you want to look at it. But since you started on the commission, the city has grown geographically, it's grown in population, it's grown in wealth, it's grown in complexity.
Yes.
And so it stands to reason to me, I would just assume that growth-related issues must consume a gigantic part of the workload of your average city commission meeting. Is that so?
I don't believe it is. Not the way it did when we were adding subdivision sort of. You and I were on the commission 04 to 08. Basically, that time period, we added, 1 year we added 800 acres.
Yeah.
And we're still building on those, right? And new stuff is not coming in anywhere near that. And there are any number of reasons for that. And I think, you know, how casually we have an affordable housing discussion where the consultant says, well, you're going to need to add 5,800 to 6,300 units. And that was a year ago, in the next 5 years. So in the next 4 years, we need to add 6,300 units. And no one but myself goes, wait a minute. I don't think we want to grow that fast. I don't think we can grow that fast. We need to look back at the last 10 years and have this discussion. Should we stop? And we're not doing that. There is no, in my opinion, there is no sort of self-aware awareness and tension of what we are doing as a city. And I was spoiled. And I think, you know, people that watched you and I, Steve, in the old days argue were spoiled at how seriously we took each other's arguments to the point where we got angry about them, but we didn't let it affect us. You know, about what it is we were doing. And we went home and all week we thought about it, right? And I see some other drivers. And then, of course, the things that we're arguing about, you could say affordable housing is growth related, but, you know, if the answer is 6,300 units, I don't know how we dump that into the East Gallatin, the wastewater from that in the East Gallatin. We can't possibly finance the streets There aren't the work people. There aren't the contractors and the subcontractors to do that. It is,
and yet, even though, even on its face, the idea that the answer to some of the headaches caused by rapid growth is to crank up the growth machine to an even faster rate. I mean, that's absurd in itself. But the fact that that can't stop the commissions to have a moment of, like, come to Jesus, what are we doing? You're telling me that these kinds of agonizing reappraisals that should be part and parcel of every Monday night, that's not happening. To me, that's mortifying to hear.
So I have asked several times now, why don't we just stop and say, we recognize the drawbacks of saying we're not going to grow more than 0.5% a year. Why don't we at least have that conversation? And their answer to me is, well, why didn't you have that when you were mayor? And
what does the word mayor have to mean?
Well, and I will tell you. So I was mayor in 6 and 7.
Oh, because you could set the agenda.
Right. I was mayor in 6 and 7, and that's when we were adding these big – we had never tried what we were trying, which is Bozeman will be the growth sacrifice zone. We will do smart growth. We will grow dense. We will have nodes, blah, 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 right? We will duplicate the old town on the west side. We'd never done that. We were going to try that. And then the next time I was mayor, we were in the depths of the recession. And if people built 5 houses and employed someone, I think we were happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last time, I was constantly rebuked. They said, well, we're going to redo the UDC, the Unified Development Code, and that's going to solve everything, right? And how did that do for everything?
Right.
Jeff, you live on Black. How did revising the UDC do for everything? It did not do for anything, really. It created this massive malfunction that's paralyzed both planning and development. And that could be a good thing, but it's unintentional, so it's not a good thing.
Okay.
If it's intentional and self-respect, introspective.
So if you're going to give the commission a grade for its growth management right now, because I'm an instructor at MSU.
Yeah, right.
I think of A, B, C, D, F.
Yeah.
What grade would you give the commission that you're a part of? So it's a self-grade.
I'm giving myself a D. A D, which means you have to take the class again, right?
Darn.
I remember we didn't even have D's at William and Mary. You either flunked or you passed.
Right.
And I would give myself a D. We did build to a density. I think like Harvest Creek, you and I approved Harvest Creek. It's looking pretty good over there. I actually like it. We failed at neighborhood nodes. We failed at road design. We failed at
lighting.
We failed at speed limits. And really, we failed at recreating what we loved best of Bozeman west of 19th, which is what we said with every breath we were going to do. So is that a failure? It's darn close. Everybody, though, when they mention growth, they always think about the stuff, the retail center. You know, we're a third-order retail trade center of Bozeman. We have a Costco. We have, you know, Home Depot, Lowe's, the stuff, you know, that we have a hospital, and we're going to have some more. We can get into that someday. But all of that helps pay the freight, and it gives us a firm sort of tax and economic foundation. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the way we live and how we preferred to live when we all live down here.
Yeah. I think that it would be good to segue.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, it would be interesting, Jeff, to share with some of the listeners what some of your most vivid memories from serving time on city council were. Anything that jumps to mind as a really memorable experience or two?
Me and Kirchhoff trying to get the last word in, right? Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you look back at that.
Of course I do.
There was some entertainment value.
I wouldn't be here if I didn't think you, Steve, had the best interest of the community at heart, just as I do, right? There is no doubt about it. And I will tell you this. So here's a favorite memory is, in the midst of all our battles and everything else, philosophical and everything else, Steve says, well, I'm going to be going away and I can't teach my local government class, so would you come up and teach it?
I remember, yeah.
And I actually recruited the two people that went down and staffed the local government study commission 2004 to 2006. the one that brought us the charter, the secretary of that came from your class.
Really?
And I gave, you know, I used that time to give him this big pitch about local government studies and what that meant. And but you are the only person to ever invite me to come up and talk about local government at MSU. So thank you for that.
Oh, and, my pleasure.
And way to step out of your comfort zone there. Like I am tonight. But, you know, and I say that jokingly, but certainly that is a vivid memory, is us, you know, there was this front page headline 6 months into my term. And remember, I replaced Jarvis Brown, who was a pretty easy going guy.
Moderate.
Yeah. That said, city commission gets along more than it doesn't. And that was a big doomsday headline. And I've always been very proud of that. Now they all get along because they can ignore me and do whatever they want. But but in those days, we really had to listen to each other and negotiate with each other and try to find the right answer. And you know, I'm very proud of that. I have that framed. And that's a big deal to me, is that we got along and that we looked for the right answer. Mm-hmm. Not the one that gave us the most jelly beans individually, but the right answer.
I agree.
I was just going to ask, I certainly appreciate your being willing to engage in some self-criticism, but what do you think are some of the things that the City Commission did really well that made a positive impact on the quality of life here during your tenure on the Commission?
You know, so there are things... I am very uncomfortable with sort of the legacy question, right? And I notice other people are too, because I remember my 11th grade English and Shelley's "The Lone and Sand Goes Away."
Ozymandias.
Yes, right. That's right. In every direction, and you know, look upon my works, ye mighty, in despair. Right, and there's nothing but sand, and so I think about. Did we do things? You know, we did. We did invite all of that land in. We developed it. And people live there, right? There are people living and working and contributing to this town. As I said, my son is able to live here, lives in that newer part of the town. You know, my other son goes to Montana State and he's getting a degree in computer science. And I, you know, all of the sort of MSU succeeding and Bozeman succeeding, I think that helps us all. I know that there are drawbacks, right? But I think it all helps us all, because I remember coming in 1975, my relative economic standing was much better when I worked for the railroad in Livingston and lived here and got 10 hours of overtime a weekend or whatever. Mm-hmm. I probably made three times what the average income of Bozeman was doing that.
Wow.
Now I make less than the area median income, right? Mm-hmm. And there are tons of people that are coming in with, you know, tons of money. So it's very different. Mm-hmm. And yet I look at the opportunities that are here. And I think that we were a town with limited opportunities. And yet I hope that we have preserved this sort of, oh, you're new to town. Well, welcome. And what can you contribute? And mm-hmm. and I work on that a lot, and I hope we still have some of that. And I feel it. I feel it sometimes when people come and talk to the commission. It isn't that they're trying to turn us into what they left. It's they're trying to contribute what they know, and I'm open to that. I think we're all open to that.
That's a nice perspective.
It's a good thing to know we can still do that.
Let me ask you, what are you going to miss? Let's keep the door open, a crack.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
There's a
wide
chance,
open.
there's a chance for a return.
Yes,
right?
There is, very much.
But in the time that you will be away, is it too early to know what you're going to miss about it?
Anyone that's been listening to this can tell that I'm extremely wonky, right? I am a local government wonk. And I spend my time reading about other local governments. I particularly like larger cities that have larger problems and how we translate solutions mm-hmm. down to here. But I'm a local government wonk. And if I'm not going to be a local government wonk, what am I going to get wonky about? right? And it's not going to be fishing. I mean, it just can't be these little things. Or
you don't have something waiting for you. You don't have a project. You don't have a next thing.
Other than the libertarians beating on me to run for some national office, no, which I'm obviously not going to do. There's no. First of all, I'm not that libertarian, and second, I'm not interested in going statewide or tackling the partisanship.
You're a homeboy.
One of the greatest things about being on the Bozeman City Commission is I was mostly free of partisanship. Mm-hmm. I did not have to be a D every time I ran. I did not have to be an R every time I ran. In fact, I couldn't go to their election night celebrations without being asked, what are you doing here? I don't know how many times I've been asked that. So, you know, I'm going to go away for a month and try to rip the Band-Aid off and sort of detox. Or it's not really toxic, but to decompress. And we'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the advantages of this, taking a break, is to be able to look back and think about things that I'm proud that we did, that we as a city were able to do. You know,
so maybe not a retirement, but a reset.
A reset. I think. And one of the big resets has got to be this. We got to have that we got to have that self introspection conversation about how we didn't get what we wanted mm-hmm. with those 800 acres and. How do we recover from that? I think that's the big reset, and I'm going to work on that some, I think, in the future. You know, there are all kinds of little things over the years that we did. And the city of Bozeman may be the only city that offers low-income property owners, you know, usually people in their own house or condo, low-income, who get a low-income break on their property taxes. They also get a break on their utilities, their city utilities. And they get that because there's a code that comes through on the tax bill, you know, when you're preparing the tax bills in the county treasurer's office. And you can take that code and download it to the city. And then all of those people that get that code for their property taxes get it for their utilities too. Now, is that 25 people? Is that 100 people? Haven't asked anyone that in a long time. But when we did that, we were the only city to ever do that. And it was because I was the county treasurer, and then Anna Rosenberg, who's now an assistant city manager, came over as the finance director. She knew exactly how the process worked and put it in place. Mm-hmm. And, no one does anything on the city commission by themselves. First of all, you have to have two other votes, and then you have to have a bunch of people behind you. And also, almost everything we do, the truth is we do it as a community, whether it's saving the Ellen mm-hmm. Theater or whatever, you know. Our downtown is healthy, you know. And we have a parking garage which did every single thing that we said it was going to do, you and I.
I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
Imagine that your city commissioners listened to you.
That is funny.
Imagine that they listened and that they would actually take a piece of your advice.
Yeah.
And let's look forward just for a moment.
Yes.
And if you could give them one piece of advice, something that you would really hope they would follow through on in the next 2 years that you're not going to be serving.
So it's not a competition. You're not trying to score any political points. You are looking for the best solution for Bozeman. Don't fall in love with the smell of your own farts or the glow of your own ideas. Because you know what? They need to change before they get to be public policy. They're almost never sprung from your mind like Zeus's offspring, perfect. And so be prepared to listen. Be prepared to... test them against people who have different ideas than you do. And go out to the person that disagrees with you the most and talk to them frequently and bang your ideas off of them before you bring them up to the dais and see what happens. What I would say to someone who runs for office or who is in office is there are two things that Montanans admire. And one of them is you have to be the same person on Monday night in front of the TV or the one in the paper that you are at the grocery store or that you are standing out in front of your house. You have to be genuine. And the second thing you have to be is that you have to have ideas. You know, Iho Pomeroy is so genuine. She does all of those great little fundraisers and big fundraisers at her place, serving noodles for the homeless and the poor and the whatever they might be, teenagers. And you know that when you see Iho at her restaurant and when you see Iho Monday night, she's Iho.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she is a genuine person. And she occasionally, I think, runs every single idea by every one of the other four commissioners. So she has ideas, and then she tests them out. And yet, you know, you don't see that on Monday night. You don't see any of those things on Monday night. But she's gotten elected, and I'm sure she could get elected again because she's genuine and she's always out there talking ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be two of the things. Don't be afraid of a big idea. You know, when I started talking about a two-year college, Jeff Rupp says, "You're taking my affordable housing levy and spending it on this wild idea that we're going to have a two-year college. You're never going to get a two-year college here." And I think, and of course, I didn't think I was either. I never would have thought that Governor Brian Schweitzer would appoint me to the Board of Regents. And yet we have Gallatin College here. 800 people attend that now. And so that's a big idea. Don't be afraid of big ideas.
Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things you asked me was how can citizens... think of a time when citizens have affected city policy. The grassroots success of the Warming Center, which was very grassroots, and a little bit of HRDC, my friend Jeff Rupp, and HRDC. And now, of course, it is getting some city funds and a lot of donated funds. And they have a place down they have a plan. And if you go out to cities that are dealing with their homeless problem, by building things. They are the plan, I think, in the future where it's a bigger place, small places where people can live and the services can come to them. They got that plan. I've seen that in other cities. I've talked to other mayors about that. Boy, the stretch of that from here's a bus ticket. Mm-hmm. They get federal money in Missoula, so go to Missoula, and that's where they get the federal money for homeless. And you know, because all small towns in Montana can't have homeless shelters and that kind of thing. And some of them a church does it, and some of them they say we got to go to Billings for that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, we are a small town in a big state, but we've grown into a bigger town, and that's. The progression of that has been driven mostly by people who care. You know, I think Ron Bray, the former assistant city manager, he didn't use the assistant city manager to help the Warming Center. He goes down at night and stays at the Warming Center. So that's one where citizens have been active and affected the city decision-making. You know, person in me that says, well, you know, the citizens every 2 years elect a commission, and their biggest influence on commission decisions is who they elect.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a smart aleck answer, but at the same time, I think you were going for something more than that, which is when did people show up on a Monday night and affect your decision making? And that is a difficult question because so many times, like we just saw with, issue of the emergency shelter up in Figgin subdivision, so many times it is these NIMBY decisions. And a lot of times they fail because a commissioner like me, it's been there 16 years, has just seen it over and over and over again. Well, this little spot, you know, it's a good idea, but it just shouldn't happen right here, you know. And I've told people, well, let's see, there's a high school right there, and there's a big park right there. And so why shouldn't there be some apartments right across the street from that? I don't understand what the point you're making, mm-hmm. right, other than you live right behind that and you don't want to live
right.
near apartments.
Right.
But everybody in Bozeman, in Old Bozeman, live near apartments. I live there near apartments up in Westfield. I live near apartments over in University Subdivision. Everybody in town lives near apartments because 55 to 60% of people, rent in this town. Mm. We're not a town of ownership. We're a town of renters. And yet we have never slipped into this, you're just a town of transients. I think people move here and they want to stay here. You know, in the 80s, if you recall, remember the professor up there at MSU that did the study, and it's a famous name and I can't think of it. And, you know, 3 out of 5 people that move here leave within a few years.
Oh, right, the churning factor.
Yeah, and that was really what was happening in the 80s because we were in a deep recession then, actually a depression. But, you know, I think that's changed. And the difference in Bozeman and the growth in Bozeman is not that it's changed that people are moving here, because they were always coming here in the 80s too. It's just that so many of them were leaving. And now more people can stay because they find a better job, or there's a little whatever their employment is. There's 2 of them or 3 of them possible employers, and they can go from one to the next. They don't have this risk like they just lose their job and off they go.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So since I'm sitting here with both of you being commissioners,
we're both
commissioners and former mayors.
Yes.
What would you tell folks? You know, you talked about people showing up and testifying Monday nights at the commission meetings, but is that the most effective way for people to have an influence, or are there other ways you would suggest people engaging if they have an issue that they're passionate about and want to express their views to you and learn the thoughts of commissioners?
I think you have to do one-on-one with the commissioners. You got to bring it, right? It can't be emotional. It must be, you must come with the facts, right? We're most of us, I think, on the commission, even now, even with our slippage on how the West Side's developed, most of us are studying and we're learning and we're, you know, taking this seriously, and if you're going to show up and you're going to argue out of emotion, or you're going to rant at us about something that's happening, we've heard that before on Monday nights. But I want to meet with you and talk to you, and you set a time, and you meet with each commissioner, and you say, look at this issue. Right. And how it's and here's the larger issue. And are you really going to allow that all over the city? Is that really what you want, even in this section of the city? I think that's where you make some headway. Certainly, over the years, I've encountered commissioners that counted the number of testifiers. Right. And Steve knows this, right? And a little check mark by yes, and a little check mark under the no, and then look at how many. And they would even orchestrate that, like say, you better all show up so I can have a lot of check no's so I can say, look at all the no's. Most of us are pretty wise to that stratagem, right? Mm-hmm. And remember, that might be 150 people, and we're a city of 50,000 now. So we're not a city of where 100 people might be a significant group of people in the larger context. And dealing with the larger context, it is a thing. And the other thing is, stop being, an argument of exclusion is going to get you nowhere, even with a guy like me. I'm not excluding people, right? I'm the guy that wrote the letter that said I support equal rights for same-sex couples when every politician in the country was still talking about the sacred bond between one man and one woman, from the president to the governor to the senators, everybody. And I'm out there going, that ain't it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's Bozeman. I knew I could write that letter and take that stance because I knew Bozeman was not a town of exclusion. I believe it I know it is. And when people have a chance for introspection, they go, oh yeah, I get it. And so don't argue about exclusion and exclusivity. I moved here with nothing, knowing no one, without a bit of bona fides whatsoever. And, people accepted me and wanted to know what I can contribute. And, I feel good about this town being a place where people can move to and succeed.
All right. Personally, I really appreciate, I was only occasional watcher of city commission meetings and certainly not as engaged as some people, but never failed to see you well prepared and really knowledgeable and curious about the topics, whether or not I agreed with the position you took. So thanks for your service on the commission, Jeff.
I appreciate that, Jeff. I know you pay attention to a lot of subjects out there, so... you know, it's not faint praise. I appreciate it.
Let me chime in on a thanks, Jeff. Thanks for your service to date.
All right.
And thank you all for listening to another edition of The View From Here. You're listening to KGVM and Bozeman 95.9 FM.